Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer Distributors. For more information, visit unionbeerdist.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, this is a special show. I was driving up to Vermont to do some radio shows, and I ended up staying in Cambridge, New York, and I didn't want to go any further. And I've been a big fan of New York Ag for a long time, and we've got some great people with us. So let's do a quick introduction, everybody around the room. First, a good farmer friend of mine, Michael.
I'm Mike Yezzi. I'm the farmer owner of Flying Pigs Farm.
And Michael, I've known you a long time. I mean, how long have you been farming in this area?
We did a farm, the farmhouse in the late 90s, had our first pigs in 2001, and I've been going to the green markets since then and doing it full-time for over 13 years.
You know, and Washington County is where we're at. Your farm's been in Shushan, New York. You know, I'm really a city guy, and knowing what you do through growing my seed green markets and a lot of different farmers over the years I've met, I've wanted to come up here. So I'm really excited to be here. And you, Michael, and Claire Harton have introduced me to some great people, including here. Nate, you're an apple farmer. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, Jimmy. I grew up in the apple business. Grandfather, my great-grandfather, number of generations, been in the fruit business. Grew up at Green Mountain Orchards, Putney, Vermont. Did an investor project where we planted a lot of Granny Smith in South Carolina and came back up here and settled in New York in 94. So I've been here 23 years here at Saratoga Apple, where we grow about 40 acres of 40 or 50 different varieties of apples, which we market throughout the year at farmers markets and at our year-round farm market here on Route 29 in Schuylerville.
That's great. All right. And apples are a big part of the economy up here, it seems to be. And you also were in Vermont, and there's connections with Vermont and New York, and we'll talk about that. And another longtime farmer family guy who's opened a farm brewery license establishment.
Hi, I'm Matt Stewart. I'm one of the owners of Argyle Brewing Company, based out of Greenwich, New York, and also at our second location in Cambridge, New York. We're the first farm brewery in Washington County, and it's a really proud thing to say for that. And I'm multiple generation dairy farming family, sheep farming families, going back to the late 1700s, and it's just nice to be able to work with aspects of the county and to essentially give back. It's a wonderful feeling.
That's great, man. We're going to learn a lot more about your family and what's going on up in this area. I know you're really proud of Washington County. We're technically not in Washington County right now. We're over the border in Schuylerville, but we'll talk more about that. And Ashley, you've been up here. You're farming. You're raising sheep. Tell us what brought you here.
I moved here after my parents bought a farm in Cambridge, New York. I feel really lucky to live next door to my parents. We raise sheep together for meat and fiber and for sheepskins. And we also do a land management for New York State Parks with our sheep also. And I come from a farming family, but it's been generations getting back to it. So I love living here. It's beautiful, and there's a great land base for agriculture.
That's great. There's a lot more people at this table, and they're going to be joining us in a bit. But one reason the show came together as well is we have a guy that's running for Congress, and we're going to school him a little bit. And I think it's important to have people in the area who care about farming and beer and cider express their thoughts about what is important for their elected officials. And I've also know that not as many people are running for office anymore. So also Eric from Saratoga Apple, say hi too.
Yeah, hi, Eric Darrow, Saratoga Apple. I'm Nate Darrow's son, and we come from a long line of apple farmers, and as far back as we can trace is my six times grandfather, Jedediah Darrow, in 1784. It's part of our family history. So we like growing apples, and it's in our family, and that's what we've been doing here at Saratoga Apple since 94, and then many different family orchards since then in different areas.
So Washington County is a special place. It's an ag county. Let's everyone talk about what's so special about Washington County, you know, especially for people like from New York City and myself, and why I should come up here, why I should buy your products. Michael, you want to give that a shot?
Well, I think the whole region, Saratoga, Northern Rensselaer, Washington County, it's sort of the eastern frontier of agriculture in the United States. I mean, there are folks who I know in New Hampshire and Vermont, and if they need a tractor part or something, they have to come to Washington County to get it, or they got to wait for the part to come from, you know, across the country or Japan or Germany, wherever their tractor was made. So we're fortunate enough to have enough of the larger dairy farms and crop farms that support the agricultural infrastructure that allows smaller farmers like Ashley and myself to be able to farm. Without that infrastructure, the tractor supplies, the hardware stores, the feed dealers, slaughterhouses, auction barns, without all of that infrastructure, which Washington, Saratoga, Northern Rensselaer County still have, without that, we wouldn't be able to do what we're doing. So it's the whole region that supports that that makes this a really unique and vibrant agricultural area.
And Matt, you know, your family, tell us about your family's background. You've been in this area a long time. You know, what type of farming they've done and what brought you to open a farm brewery here in this county?
Sure. My mom grew up in Argyle, and my dad grew up in the next town north in Hartford, all of Washington County, of course. And my mom's side of the family, we've been on the same land, the last name is Little with D's, since the late 1700s, and very few of us have left the land over the years. And my family goes back multiple generations of actual dairy farmers. A lot of my family is still in the aspects of the dairy farming industry and what have you. My parents were actually the first members of their family that did not go into agriculture. They met in x-ray school, which is good, so they met and here I am. But it's really too, you find that families in Washington County stick around, you know, especially in Argyle with the settlers, a lot of Scotch-Irish, a lot of mix and max and what have you, and it's just it's wonderful that feeling of family and camaraderie, and the roots really do run so deep around here, you know, especially in the Northeast, and it's just it's this overwhelming feeling of pride that I get knowing that we live in this area. And I mean, I walk out my door every morning and I just see the range of the foothills of Taconics right there, and we can walk out our door and look any direction around here and just see absolute natural beauty and beautiful farmed landscapes, and in this case, you know, apple orchards, and it's heaven in my opinion.
And Nate, what brought you here? Your family had apple orchards in Vermont for a long time.
My grandfather planted, my father expanded, and I expanded Green Mountain Orchards in Putney, Vermont. My brothers, Evan and Matt, run it now. And I went off and did an investor project, planted 1,000 acres of Granny Smith in South Carolina. When I came back up north, I was interested in direct marketing, and I ended up coming over here and buying this orchard in Schuylerville, New York, came Saratoga Apple. And Washington County, though, is some of my family came from there generations ago up in Hebron. I think of Washington County as New York's Vermont corner. It's very like Vermont. And I'm a transplant of Vermonter. And so Washington County is just so special. When most people think of New York, I mean, the city, and then you've got, okay, upstate is out of the city, but Washington County is a special little corner that it very much resembles Vermont.
All right, and Eric, it's your son, Eric Dara. Will you tell us about the first cider that we're tasting so we can taste some of the product that you're making?
Yeah, so previously I mentioned my six times grandfather, Jedediah Darrow, and this style, the scrumpy, which is scrumpy is actually an old English term used to describe locally made ciders made using very natural and traditional methods. And so this method of making cider here pays homage to the old school, very traditional style of hard cider. It's as natural of a hard cider as we can make. We use the natural yeast on the apples, no added sugars, no added sulfites. The running joke with the scrumpy is that no matter how hard we try, we never get a headache from it because of those reasons. But using these methods, you are going to get a true dry, which is a super dry. And so for many American palates that like a sweeter cider, this one's going to be too dry. And so our commercial semi-sweet, that one is more popular. But there is a fierce following for the scrumpy, that people that are trying to get away from the sweetness, get away from the sulfites, and so those are the people that we make the scrumpy for, and we do have a fierce following for it and people that really enjoy it.
You know, I was looking for some backstory in Washington County, but your dad showed me the back label of your cider. Would you read the top of that to me?
Yeah, so our story that we put on the back of every bottle of our hard cider is this. In 1784, Jedediah Darrow planted the first apple orchard in Washington County in the town of Hebron, New York. Seven generations later, the Darrows continue the family tradition at Saratoga Apple, about 10 miles east of Saratoga Springs, New York. Our 200-acre farm with 40 acres of apple trees is in the heart of New York's apple country, a unique climate and soil where we nourish the orchard with rock dusts and sea minerals, allowing the trees to forage for all the microelements to grow full-spectrum healthy apples. Everybody knows you should eat an apple a day, but some of us prefer to drink them. We've enjoyed drinking our hard cider right along. Now you can too. Raise a glass with us to New York Hard Cider.
All right, so there's really a guy named Jedediah Darrow. And let's get everybody else. So we've got the guy who's running for Congress in this district, kind of inspired the show, talking about everything from Cambridge all the way up to Malone, New York. Please introduce yourself, sir.
Hi, I'm Don Boyajian. I'm running for Congress in the 21st Congressional District. I'm a third-generation native of Saratoga County. I live in Cambridge, New York, in Washington County now. And in my family's third generation in Saratoga County, my grandfather, he was actually a farmer in Saratoga County, came to the United States. He knew a little bit about farming, and he bought a sheep farm on Hudson River Road, had a sheep farm of a couple hundred head of sheep and a livestock auction, and he'd purchase calves often from Washington County and then sell them at the auction. And, he loved it. It was never an easy life, and So I'm a Saratoga County kid. I worked in Congress as a legislative aide for a while, and I worked on environmental policy and agriculture policy, and I usually involved the agriculture appropriations every year, the spending that went to different USDA programs. And, I'm an environmental and town attorney here for several towns in upstate New York, and I just love it here.
Great, man. Thanks for coming on the show. And then, Matt, for you, a big change in this region is now there's a place to go and get beer. In Cambridge, you've got a tasting room. You've got the farm brewery operations in Greenwich, New York. And, how has it been received here?
It's been received very well. And I'll tell you, our biggest fans are the ones that live walking distance, and it's great. We hardly actually, we don't do a lot of distribution. We mainly sell right out of our tap rooms, and it's been great. And we've been open for 3.5 years now in Greenwich and about 3 months now in Cambridge. And I think the best part of it for me is I've made some of the best friends you could ever imagine having, through this industry. And you meet all kinds of people and hear their stories. And it's been working out really, really well for us. You know, that's what allowed us to open the second tap room. And we're real proud of that because we're actually using a building that stood dormant for a long time. It's an old train depot, and it's a really fun space to have a tap room in and reusing the building. And I just have a great time when you have these people that have lived in the area for years and years and years walk into our Cambridge tap room, for example, and just look up in awe at just the ceiling height and the woodwork. And it's just really fun to be a part of that and to bring a smile to people's faces and to essentially have them share aspects of our life with us. These conversations where they have something bad happen in their life, good happen, wonderful times. It's just wonderful to be a part and kind of just woven into the community. And it's the greatest feeling.
That's great. That's a big part of the New York Farm Brewery and Farm Cider License. Man, I know you brought some beer, and it's actually on tap here at the tap room at Saratoga Apple. Eric, tell us what program you have. You have beer and cider on tap. You know, you've really embraced the local area.
Yeah, so we have a farm cidery, a New York State farm cidery license, which allows us to not only produce and offer our own hard cider, but also other New York State beers, ciders, wines, and spirits. And some people get a little confused when you say New York beer, cider, wine, and spirit. They think that it only means that it was manufactured in New York State, but that's not necessarily true. Not only is it manufactured in New York State, but also upwards of almost 100% New York State grown ingredients. And so those are the only types of alcohols, wines, beers, and ciders that we can offer. But that being said, there are numerous phenomenal breweries, cideries, wineries, and distilleries all throughout New York State, and not only throughout New York State, but locally, like in Greenwich and Cambridge and Saratoga, South Glens Falls. You could Fort Anne, you know, just everywhere.
What are some of the beers that you have on tap here, some of the breweries from around the area?
Yeah, so we have Common Roots from South Glens Falls. We have Argyle Brewing Company from both Greenwich and Cambridge. R.S. Taylor's and Sons Brewing, they're very often on there. Artisanal Brew Works, they're just on the other side of Saratoga Springs on Geyser Road. And all of them are producing some phenomenal beers and ciders, all from New York State.
Okay, Ashley, you're going to cover a little introductions, but... You know, you have a lot to say. You're an outspoken person, so jump in and tell us what else should we be talking about.
Well, say you're out of towner, like you, Jimmy. You want to come to a quiet corner. Washington County's great. I mean, there's beer places all over. You can go on a full-on brewery tour, which I did with my parents a couple weekends ago, and we went from Brown's Brewery in Hoosick to the Argyle Tap Room in Cambridge. And then we headed up to Hebron to the R.S. Taylor Brewery. And then we went to Fort Anne. And I feel real bad. I can't quite remember the name of that one. Is it Battle Hill? Which has really nice beers, local ciders, including some of your cider. Mm-hmm. And also cider from Slybrow Cidery. So there are quite a few local places you can drink and eat, which is great. Everybody's got a little bit of something to eat, except for Argyle, but maybe you'll get something soon.
We get food trucks, luckily, in Cambridge, so we've been fortunate every weekend to have a food offering that it's its own entity, and people can go out to the street side, grab food, bring it on in, and at both of our locations, people are also more than welcome to, you know, order a pizza, have it delivered, or bring in. I've had whole picnic baskets come in before, too, so it's nice to have that option as well.
Yeah.
That's great, and let's change it up. Michael and Ashley, you know, you guys are... Michael's raising pigs and chickens. Ashley, you raise sheep now. Want to tell us about a few things that are issues, or maybe things that the government can help you with, or things you don't want help with, or anything else related to that as being a farmer?
I think the government has an important role in agriculture. The food safety certainly can't be, you know, understated. I deal with them, the regulations related to slaughterhouses. Unfortunately, sometimes the one-size-fits-all makes the small producer's life a little harder, or the small operator. So I think that, you know, there's an important role for the regulations, but making sure they're right-sized. There's a lot of research, a lot of great stuff that USDA is doing for rural communities and grants and research. So I think there's the USDA office in Greenwich is a very important part of the community up here.
I feel lucky to be farming in Washington County. There's a lot of great grass. I'm basically a grass operation. I also feel really lucky that Mike Yezzi is here kind of plowing the way for us small farmers. He makes runs to the city, which are really helpful for me if I want to contact a client in the city. I'm able to send my meat with him, so he's really helpful and supportive. I also forgot to say the name of my farm is called Fortunate You, since everyone here is sort of plugging their products. I'm going to too. Hopefully I'll be coming to a place near you.
And the other day you showed me your rams.
Yeah, I got some new beautiful rams that they're Texel rams, and they're just these great big butterballs, and I hope they're going to be producing some really butterball-ish prodigy.
And you weren't shy about talking about husbandry. So, well, you mentioned something about how you control the young males.
Oh, okay. So, as men know...
Whatever you said to me this weekend, I'm going to ask you. The show's going to go for 2 hours, guys. Don't worry.
As you know, I like to keep my operation running pretty easy, so I like to keep all my animals together, men, males, and females. So to keep the males from impregnating everyone, there's a simple procedure which they undergo at a very young age, which just involves their testicles being pushed up into their body, and then their nuts elastrated so that the testicles never descend, so the sperm is too hot to impregnate any ewes. So that's how we run all our animals together, except for the rams. They stay with the herd for most of the year, but between August and October live a secular life.
Don't get fresh with her, Jimmy.
One time last year, we did a poster for an event in New York City, and Michael corrected that there was a drawing. There was a pig with a tail, and I think it was missing some things.
Right. It was a sow, not a boar. I often say there's very little room on farms for intact males. You know, you might have one bull, and everybody else is it just causes trouble. So, yeah.
Good, a little bit of local color up here. We're going to introduce a couple more of our guests, and then we're going to change the battery out. This is going to be a long show. We're going to keep going, guys. A lot of good stuff here. So next up, we have a chef who's working in the area.
Hi, my name's Adam Bigelow. I'm with 9 Miles East Farm in Schuylerville, New York. And what we like to do here is try and make our mission is to make local food available to busy people. And not often... is local and healthy food accessible to everybody, especially professional people. And what our service does is we make prepared meals for home and office delivery, both through a subscription service and through also like kind of a food truck delivery model, where we have vans that go to people's workplace at a set time each week, and they're able to purchase local healthy food made with local ingredients and sustainably sourced and responsibly sourced proteins and vegetables.
This is a great start, guys. We're going to have a lot to talk about. We're sitting on what route is this, Nate?
This is Route 29, about 10 miles east of Saratoga Springs.
So here's some of the cars go by. We're sitting under an apple tree that actually the apples keep falling, and it's bucolic, you know, pastoral setting. So let's take a short break. I'm going to change the batteries. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
In 1996, Sheehan Family Companies, formerly L. Knife & Son, acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn. Union Beer has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. It has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Brooklyn and parts of Queens through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten Island, and Long Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education at all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 7 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit unionbeerdist.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, we drove up here to Washington County. We're staying in Cambridge, New York. We've been to Greenwich. We're out here just over the border in Schuylerville, New York, at the Saratoga. Eric, what's the name of this place?
Saratoga Apple, just 10 miles east of Saratoga Springs on Route 29 in Schuylerville, New York.
And we're sitting on another great example of the New York Farm Brewery and Farm Cidery license. This is a you-pick apple place, and now they've got a tasting room with beer, cider, wine. And we're sitting outside under an apple tree by the road and having a great interview. So let's get another guest. Jared, introduce yourself and what you're doing.
I'm Jared Woodcock. I'm the agriculture coordinator for SUNY Adirondack. It's a small community college in Glens Falls, Queensbury region. We also have a campus in Wilton as well. What I do is develop ag programming. I'm a small farmer by heart and trade, and came on with the school 3 years ago to help them develop some agriculture programming.
Great, and we've been talking about a lot of things. And Matt, we just had one of your beers. Which one was it?
Oh, that was our cute little blonde ale. I actually named it for my cute little blonde 7-year-old daughter. It's one of our year-round offerings. It's just a nice light ale. We actually add a couple little adjunct malts in there so it doesn't thin out on the palate. And we also on tap here we have our summer shandy, our summertime offering, where we fuse our blonde ale with organic lemonade to create a really light, refreshing, or as we like to call them around here, lawnmower beers.
Can we try that one next?
Absolutely.
So some backstory on this region. So when we talked to Don, who's running for Congress, he mentioned this district is huge. It goes all the way up to Malone in the north of New York. I never knew that there was any farmland or anything above the Adirondacks. I thought it went right to Canada. And over the years, I've learned that, you know, Laura Ingalls Wilder's book, Farmer Boy, about her dad was set in Malone, New York in 1860. And friends of mine who, the Siegel Hop Farms, their great-grandfather in 1860 had hop farms up in Malone. And now one of our Heritage Radio Network friends, Severin from the Greenhorns, has been based there with all these young farmers. So, you know, there's definitely something in common with your congressional district, Don. So why don't you tell us a little background of this district and, you know, trying to connect it from Cambridge to Malone and just how big this district is. And a lot of America is like that. Big states, farming regions must have really big congressional districts.
Yeah, this is the largest congressional district in New York State. It encompasses 12 counties. Its southern border is kind of southern parts of Saratoga County, Fulton County. It goes to the Vermont border on the east, all the way up to the Canadian border at the north, and it goes right to Lake Ontario on the west. It's a rural district. It has a lot of agriculture, but different types of agriculture in different parts. So, you know, a lot of people not necessarily from here would say, oh, it's just a big rural part of New York, but its needs are diverse. And, you know, our border with Canada is a particularly relevant part to industry in the district, our relationship with Canada, our trade deals, and ensuring that our trade deals benefit, you know, not just agriculture as a whole, but, you know, our smaller farmers as well, because in many instances those trade deals can disproportionately benefit bigger farms and leave the smaller farmers behind. So it's a diverse area with diverse needs. You know, a lot of people think of northern New York and think the Adirondacks go right up to the top, but they don't. You go up north and it's back to you know, non-mountainous farm country and hardworking people, and it's, you know, it's diverse and it's wonderful.
Let's keep talking about the history of this region. Matt, I know your family's been here a long time.
Yeah, both of my families, my mom and my dad's side, have been here a long time. You know, you've been here a long time when there are roads named after your family and lanes and what have you. And also, the fun part around here is that I don't think any of us know all the road names around here, because at some points kids steal the road signs. So it's very landmark-versed around here, which is nice as well. And it's just a great place to live, and the people that come through here. And it's also been really fun because in Washington County, Saratoga County, just upstate agriculture, agritourism has been booming, thanks to the craft cider, the craft beverages, the small farms, the farmers markets. And it's really just starting to boom around here. And then people on the side note are really starting to experience a lot of the historical aspects of the area, whether they're checking out architecture or doing a historical walk through one of the towns, or just, you know, I know good friends of mine are reenactors around here. I mean, the Battle of Saratoga happened, as you know, a few miles from where we're sitting right now. And it's just a great place that offers something for everyone, whether you're in the craft industry or agritourism or history buff, or just want to just go for a nice drive in the country where your worst fear are the deer that like to run out in front of you. That's why we take it a little slower out here too. Those deer are awful. But it's a nice thing. It's a nice way to live.
And Matt, tell us where you went to college and what you studied.
Sure. I actually went up to Paul Smith College. It's near Lake Placid, back in the late 90s. And my degree was actually in urban tree management. Not really utilizing the major, but what it did was it set me on the path to the person that I am now. And it just led me to different stages in my life that led me to get into home brewing, that led me into, you know, competing a lot and opening a brewery and just loving life. And when I was up at college, I went there for 2 years, and that's the longest I've ever lived outside of this area. You'll be dragging me out of here, you know, kicking and screaming if I ever have to leave, which I'll never have to leave.
Have you ever been to New York City?
I have actually.
That's a little bit of dirt I know about him.
Yeah, I am 38 years old and have yet to go to New York City. I have not seen it, and it sounds like an awesome place, and everyone tells me it's going to be awesome. You're going to love it down there. I've had many offers of places to stay and check out, including you, Jimmy. Thank you. My graduating high school class was 36 students, and we were one of the biggest classes at the time. And definitely intimidated by the tall buildings and all the people and the crowds. I think I have a feeling I'd be the guy in the street in the fetal position, rocking back and forth or something.
Well, it's easy. You can kind of judge north and south by landmarks, you know, some tall buildings. And Jared, a little more from you. I think this is going to be a long show that we're going to edit, so we're really going to talk everybody out here. Jared, tell us more about what you do. Are you involved in farm policy? You know, some of the details of your job and observations about this region.
Yeah. So I'm kind of jack of all, master of none. Small farmer, homesteader, 3 or 4 generations out of farming, but everyone's raised their own food right up until through me. About 5 generations in the Cambridge area, born, raised, never left kind of joke, but left for a little while and came back to raise my family. One thing I notice when I travel around is and come home is sort of the feeling, the energy, and it seems kind of voodoo and kind of hippie. And one of Nate's good buddies of mine, or mutual friends of ours, David Yarrow, he talks a lot about earth energies. And when you actually look at topo maps of Cambridge and you see that the glaciers came down and dropped all of its best soil right in our valley, that's not voodoo or hippie. It's legit good farmland. And it's so good it forces the river to turn back north right there. So it's kind of a cool spot. And right now I live down in Shushan and right below Mike Yezzi's house, right where that river switches north. So it does have a cool energy. And it's a great place to raise your kids. My current work is with, you know, as I said, developing ag programming for the community college. And that's sort of a generic thing. We do everything from, you know, Nate's hosting some apple pruning classes and propagation classes, things like that. We also do, this last week, we hosted...
Apples are dropping from the tree right around us.
Almost knocking us out. It seems like a waste. Last week we hosted Armed to Farm. It's a national farmers veteran, or military veteran farmer training course. It's put on by the NCAT, which is the National Center for Appropriate Technology, and the Cornell Small Farms Program. We're the third and final stop in New York State, and it went really well. Due to driving constraints, we focus pretty much all of our energy in Argyle, which is a very small town in Washington County. It's also a dry town, and it's also where his town's brewery is named after. But as funny as it is, one of the farmers there was joking and said, there's not really anything in Argyle. Well, except for a slaughterhouse and beef farmers and dairy farmers and pretty much everything you could ever need to live except for stores and roads and infrastructure. So it's kind of beautiful in that sense.
Ashley, you want to say more about this region?
Oh, I really like what Jared just had to say, and I like living here because of the natural beauty and just the things that you actually really need are here. You can live a very simple life eating clean food, drinking local things. It's beautiful, and it is a good place to raise your kids. It's just a nice place to be.
Years ago, I advocated against fracking in New York because I thought that everyone thinks of Vermont as being pure, whether it's their maple syrup, and then they had all these great breweries. And my biggest impetus was that, wow, New York has so much great farmland and so great products, you know, why tarnish the image? You don't have to talk about fracking, but what is it about Vermont versus New York? And you know, everyone thinks Vermont is beautiful and pastoral, and not everyone has that same image of New York.
Well, you know, I think, Jimmy, a lot of people, there's an urban perspective that, you know, on the other side of the Hudson River is the Midwest, or is upstate, is kind of this unknown air. But as a farmer, you're really aware that New York is a gigantic farming state. And New York is tall and it is broad. In other words, you can drive 6 hours north-south on the thruway, and you can drive six or more hours east-west, and it's just a gigantic state. And many people don't know that New York is the number two apple producer in the country, behind only Washington State. And Washington State has some special reasons for being so big. They've got this highland desert, which once it got irrigated with, you know, subsidized federal irrigation projects, it was ideal land for growing apples. But New York is a farming colossus, and people in the city sometimes don't realize that.
Well, I know we've had a lot of great beers in New York State. New York State Brewing's come a long way in the last even 5 years. And cider, I don't think people realize just how much really good cider is being made in New York State. One thing about your cider, I feel like that we've discussed the fact that, and I'm just talking off the cuff, but that, you know, there's some, you know, award-winning or highly recognized cider makers in the state that are only making very small amounts. But I feel like the new trend is a lot of longtime apple growers like yourself who are getting into the hard cider market.
Well, you're right, Jimmy. We got our license a couple years ago, and then about a year ago, I was told that there were maybe 60 or 70 licensed cider makers, and there were another 60 or 70 in the pipeline. So a lot of people may be coming to it a year or two later, but New York can really be the Napa Valley of cider making, partly because the apple industry in New York is very diverse, and we have a lot of different varieties. And because of that, maybe we need a few more special cider varieties, but New York has so many different kinds of apples, and with our climate, this is not highland desert. It rains a lot, and we have fabulous flavor in our apples. So I really think that New York has the potential for being the best cider producing area in the country.
So a lot of these ciders that are coming from longtime growers like 1911, Nine Pin, you guys, Embark out by Rochester, you think that they're only going to get better?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I keep tasting ciders that surprise me. How different they are, and there are many different ways of making an apple hard cider. My personal preference is toward drier ones, partly because it's easier to not put sulfites in if you have a dry cider. But that's a whole another issue.
Then another issue is getting food to market in the city. And we'll get to that when Michael Yezzi gets back. But, you know, for beer, Matt, you know, I think it's great that there's so many new breweries, and it's like you're tapping the local market. You've got places to go. Are there other, like, you know, international or, you know, national, you know, culty craft beers that inspire you guys? Or are you guys just trying to make what you can here with what you have available?
Really what inspired us was kind of when we opened up 3.5 years ago was kind of going against the trend. A lot of the smaller craft breweries were creating huge adjunct beers and hoppier beers and strong alcohol beers, and we wanted to kind of hone it in as a small brewery and kind of bring it back to just nice, you know, low ABV, low alcohol session beers. So our beers range anywhere from 4.5% to 5.5% on average. A lot of our usual, you know, beers that we have, and that was really our inspiration. And it's nice to have people come in and say thank you for making just low alcohol beers. We're in it, you know, of course, you know, running a business and everything. We're in it to survive and you know, feed our families and what have you. But really important thing for us is being not so much a successful business, but being part of the community. We do multiple fundraising events throughout the year for Breast Cancer Research Foundation, the local food pantry, just to name a couple. And that's really was the best part of it, was being a part of the community and having that pride. I mean, Greenwich is you know, one town away from the town I grew up in, and it feels really good to give back. And I also love the irony of our last conversation, because from where I'm sitting, I'm sitting in Saratoga County, looking at Washington County, looking at Vermont as well, Equinox Mountain and Merrick Mountain in the distance, which is really a cool thing about this area as well.
Wait, you're good, man. You just painted a nice picture of us for the radio. Jared.
So sitting here at this table with these farm brewers has made me think about policy a little more. And one of the things, as sort of a small town boy, is I prefer it when the government gets out of the way. And with the new farm brewing license, it's essentially a symbolic way of getting out of the way, and it's put us on the map. I'm working with a guy from the Midwest right now who is looking at expanding some businesses in New York because of the farm brewing license. I mean, I feel like if you're a politician and you want to put things on the map, figure out ways to empower farmers and allow them to not have to worry if a bureaucrat's going to drive in their door, have them like proactively do the right thing and allow them the room to do it.
I completely agree with that. From the politician's viewpoint, it totally makes sense in terms of the added tax revenue, and also it's promoting more farming of these ingredients that are going to be used in these beers and ciders. And to sum it up, we were at a Cider Association meeting, and one of the politicians, he was presenting to us, and he said, "You know, the governor used to tell me that I was Mr. No Man, but now he tells me I'm Mr. Yes Man."
That was the commissioner of the alcoholic beverages.
and the other thing too, what I really like, we came in kind of on the ground floor. The farm brewery legislation was in its infancy. It was less than a year old when we came in. We were the 22nd or 23rd farm brewery in the state, and it's ballooned up past the century mark now, which is great to see. It brings in the tourism and everything like that. But also what I really appreciate about the focus being on the smaller brewery, we deal with the smaller farms. We, for our hops, for our malt, I mean, we have maltsters and we have hop farms popping up everywhere around here. But also what it did was it gave the little guys a chance, the little breweries a chance to essentially, not to sound all Disney right now, but to follow their dreams and achieve their goals and everything, and do it in a way that we can actually do it. It wasn't unreachable financially, and we didn't have to open up as a juggernaut. We opened up as a little tiny 3.5-barrel brew house, and we would not have been able to do that without the farm brewery legislation and essentially giving us that chance. So
we've all had a chance to talk a little bit. I'm going to open it up as like Jared just did. If you guys have questions or points you want to make, this is a good time to do it, and we'll probably go back and edit some of this stuff out. Don?
Yeah, I think you guys are hitting the nail on the head. We should be, the state and the federal government should be incentivizing farmers to get the regulations out of the way so they can grow and expand and do what they're doing. But what are the biggest frustrations you're seeing either on the state level or the federal level, regulatory or otherwise? What are some of the things that are constant themes of frustrations or otherwise?
So regulation. And as it was said earlier, regulation can be a good thing for many different avenues and aspects, but there's also sometimes it can feel like there's over-regulation, and sometimes it can feel like you're being herded down a tunnel that you have to follow, and following many different regulations. And not only that, but also regulations can change almost every year, and so it's difficult to be a farmer that you're trying to take care of your crops and your herds and different farming business and stay on top of the trend of what you can and can't do, and especially being so close to Albany regulatory offices, we often see inspectors and people that come and check on us, which is a good thing, but you know it's difficult to always stay on top of exactly what we're supposed to be doing and how we're supposed to be doing it, and so in that sense it would be nice to have somebody that helps us understand exactly what we're supposed to be doing when.
And Nate?
Well, you know, on the same vein, when you think of a farmer entrepreneur, or an entrepreneur should be trying to figure out how to grow your business. And, you know, I'm getting a couple of gray hairs, and Eric's interested in the business. And sometimes it seems like we spend more than half our time sweating our butt on how to stay in compliance with lots of rules and regulations. So instead of thinking about how to grow your business, you're sweating whether you are in compliance on a lot of little details and keeping all these logs and stuff. And that's a little bit of a disincentive. I mean, at my age, I can say, well, if it gets any worse, to hell with it, I'll retire. But the younger generation is supposed to have a world of hope where they can imagine themselves coming into this world and living that way and not have to be worried about how to stay in compliance on 15 different subjects.
And a good example of this, I'm not going to talk about an example on the farm, but so recently I joined the volunteer fire department, and I was reading an article about, it wasn't in New York State, it was in a different state, but emergency blue lights, and they were talking about the regulation on emergency lights on your vehicle, and a news reporter did a special on it and did an investigation, and they found out that a lot of the city vehicles were actually had illegal emergency lights, and those were city officials in this article and when they were asked about it, they said, oh, we didn't have any idea that we were not in compliance with this regulation. I feel like that's kind of what we deal with, was we want to be in compliance all the time, and we are as much as we can, but then it's always changing, and sometimes we're like, oh my gosh, we got to change this because they changed the regulation, so we have to change to get into compliance. And so it's a constant battle, which as Nate said, sometimes it feels like you're dedicating a lot more time to that than actual farm work and growing the business as a farmer feels like they should.
That's great. And when Michael's back, we're talking a little more about policy and government. Michael, on the way over, I asked you about foreign policy, and you mentioned immigration. You want to talk about that, you know, in terms of federal policies and how it impacts farmers?
Well, I think Nate's really the one to talk about immigration and farm policy. He has a longstanding relationship with some folks, but I'll let him speak to it more than I can.
Nate, you want to talk about one federal, you know, policy that seems to be relevant to the farmers? We do have
H-2 foreign workers from Jamaica helping us during the harvest season. And in fact, you could almost say that the apple industry in the Northeast leans heavily on Jamaican workers who come in with work permission on the H-2A foreign worker program, temporary seasonal harvest workers. And it's a federal and state inspected program, and the paperwork is quite extensive, but it basically works for us. But I think the dairy farmers are not happy with it because they are not deemed to be seasonal enough, and they would like to see expansions. And then everybody doesn't really like the paperwork. I mean, we hire a consultant to help us with the paperwork because it's onerous. But the workers, the same workers, come back every year pre-trained, and so that's why we love it.
So, Don, you said part of your experience has been an attorney for farmers in this district.
Yeah, I'm an environmental attorney and town attorney for several towns. And I think you hit the nail on the head with the concerns of the dairy farmers, because there's no exception for non-seasonal work. And what he's referring to is the H-2A visas. They only cover seasonal workers. Well, dairy farmer, the workers there, they're doing their thing all year long. So the H-2A program doesn't cover that necessarily, and that creates a problem for those farms. And that's led to other complications with people working here not necessarily under the H-2A program, and with all those complications with undocumented workers. But that needs to be addressed, because you know, the dairy farmers, they need people working all year long, and that's not currently covered under the H-2A program, to my knowledge.
Great. And let's talk, again, more questions. We're going to edit this. If anyone has questions for anyone else, this is a good time to do it. I have a question for Michael. Michael, you know, you've you've been able to sell in New York City in restaurants and green markets. Do you want to give a little, you know, overview of how that works for you, and maybe it's a model for other farmers, or is it a model?
So back in 2001, was fortunate enough to get into the green markets, farmers markets. First one I did was in Brooklyn, and one of my first customers was Mary Cleaver, who's one of the pioneering chefs in the farm-to-table, local, sustainable food movement in New York, and so on the East Coast. And so she was a early customer and supporter, and then I was quickly fortunate to get connected with Peter Hoffman, and the two of them sort of mentored me in understanding what restaurants need and how to deal with them, and they were very understanding of my limitations. And so I would drop off a frozen shoulder to Peter after I finished my Saturday farmer's market. So at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, just as he's getting ready for service, and he gets this 30-pound frozen block of meat, and which does no good to him for at least 2 or 3 days till it thaws out. So he was willing to put up with that, and you know, over time started selling. He was one of the first customers who started buying whole sides, and so working with him and others, got introduced into the restaurants, and meanwhile added other farmers markets. So now we're doing 6 farmers markets on a weekend and delivered to 14 or 15 restaurants. But you know, it's a long drive. I do some drop-offs and on the way down, so it takes me 4 or 5 hours to get to the city, and I get in, you know, early Friday morning. Restaurant deliveries and farmers markets on Friday, more farmers markets on Saturday, stay overnight, more farmers markets on Sunday, and then I come home. So I try to get as much as I can in the trip down. And so the other part of that is farmers markets, and you know, the folks in New York City really appreciate what we have up here, and are very supportive of upstate farms and regional farms. So I'm very fortunate. So the two of those, you know, make it a going concern.
Jared?
So Mike reminded me of another issue I feel, I'm going to always circle back to policy, is he said his mentorship with the restaurant was a big deal. I think mentorship is a huge deal. It there are a lot of farmers out there who started in internships and apprenticeships, and pretty much all of them were illegal, and no one knows. I mean, unless you've spoken with a lawyer or you've taken a course on it, most of our apprenticeships are and internships are illegal according to the standards. But we want them. We, as the apprentices, want them. There's in other countries, and in the U.S., there's formal apprenticeship programs for trade work. And I don't want to take farming and necessarily call it a trade because it's so much more complex than that. But is there a way we can find some sort of regulatory process so we can actually have real formal apprenticeships? I mean, we can be potentially, you know, as farmers, willing to pay people who are going to commit a long term to us more than that basic minimum wage, or more than we'd be able to pay seasonal workers.
Can you explain why, how they're illegal, Jared? Is it because they're not being paid minimum wage during an initial training period, or what?
It's fairly complex. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but basically there is a very low commitment hour-wise, and most interns, unpaid interns, cannot do anything that provides income to the farm. And again, I'm not a lawyer, but there's a bunch of regulations that kind of dumb it down, and it really limits. I mean, your interns can't go to the farmers market, and that's what they want to learn. Everyone can learn how to grow at fairly rapid rates. We've been doing it for millennia. But to go to a fresh, on-top farmers market in New York City and learn how to hustle is something you got to learn from somebody else.
I haven't learned to hustle that much yet, but I have felt really well, just as a beginning farmer, coming into the business. I've been helped along a lot by Cornell Cooperative Extension, and luckily other people that will share their experiences, also through other programs offered in New York State, such as the beginning farmer, women's farmer program by Holistic Management really helped me kind of define what I want to do and how I want to get it to market, so I don't go crazy. And
you were part of a co-op too. I mean, I know, Michael, you guys at one point were part of a farm co-op up here, and then later there was the Adirondack Grazers Co-op. Does anyone want to talk about the co-op experience? Is that good for farmers getting their product to market?
I think the co-op experience can really work. I think a lot of people have to get on the same page. It's a lot to wrangle farmers together. Everyone's got pretty strong personalities, and everybody has to spend a lot of time farming. So having collective marketing is a good idea, but I haven't seen it work out that well yet.
Many a stumble.
Say that again.
Well, there we had many a stumble. We had a co-op, and Mike Yezzi was one of the main founders of it. But and I hesitate to criticize, because I mean, we sent a little product down, but I never took any kind of leadership role. But at some point, the co-op structure didn't work out, and Mike pulled out, and he was the key member. I remember when that happened, I thought, uh-oh, that doesn't seem like the best thing. But there is a lot of things that can go wrong with co-ops, but they can work out and go right.
I think the co-op model is one that's, over the years, has shown great success. I mean, there's AgriMark, and there's, you know, growers, co-ops, and various products. When you're dealing with small farmers, as Ashley said, there's a very independent streak among them, so getting them to agree on things can be challenging. But there are ways you can structure the organizations, and a few years ago, we were fortunate enough to get a Ag and Markets grant to start Farm to Chef, and farms in Rensselaer, Saratoga, and Washington County were able to coordinate product availability through a coordinator, send it down to chefs in New York City, get the orders, consolidated delivery down, consolidated billing, all which were helpful because you're getting economies of scale on delivery. It's very expensive for every farmer to have a truck and every farmer to take the time to drive to New York City. But there, you know, like I said, there's some structural things that caused it to not thrive. And so I think you can, but I think they're easily fixed. But it's a, you know, it's a promising model, but you need to find people who wanna work together.
Jarrett?
I think of co-ops as sort of forest succession. You know, you have a meadow, grows weeds, grows bushes, and it grows trees. When you have a good co-op, you have to embrace the fact that throughout history, most co-ops have outgrown themselves, and that's okay. But when you get to that outgrowth point where a lot of your members are successful, like Flying Pigs Farm, it's okay to dissolve and don't take it personally. And if you need another co-op to fill that beginner marketing void, then go for it.
And that was one of the issues, is that success, you know, if you succeed, by one of the goals was to connect the farmers with the chefs, and as they grow, and eventually you'd move on beyond the co-op, and that's a difficult long-term business model to be when success is putting yourself out of business. But there's enough people coming on, but that requires, you know, product development, finding other farmers, farmer development, and pulling that all together. And so that has to be as much a part as sales to make sure that there's someone replacing the folks who have grown and moved on to their own deliveries. So there are definitely challenges, but, you know, we can identify them. And I think, you know, folks like at this table, there's enough brain power to figure out solutions to these things.
So, you know, there's farmers markets, there's co-ops. you know, what are other ways that you guys are promoting what you're doing? Nate, the other night you showed me the Washington County Fairgrounds. Is that a draw for this area? Is that helping farmers?
Well, you know, the Washington County Fairgrounds is it's a wonderful, gigantic country fair. And one of the reasons, I mean, it's just still, some fairs have fallen by the wayside, and the Washington County Fair has gotten bigger and better, and it's an amazing spectacle with the things like the hot rod tractors and the hot rod trucks. I mean, I love it. But I wanted to make a comment about customers, if you'll let me, because to whatever extent that any of us have had a little bit of success, it's really because of our wonderful customers. And I'm thinking of people maybe listening to a program like this and thinking, well, how do I fit in? Customers make it all possible. Now, we go to some farmers markets where the customers have waited and they're in there seriously purchasing their food for the week. And they buy from us and then they say, see you next week. I love that when they say, see you next week. We go to other farmers markets, sometimes in towns that are perhaps more prosperous and have more purchasing power. And it seems like some of the customers come through the market. Maybe they buy a little of this and a little of that, but they already bought everything they needed in some other stores, and they're thinking of the market as a pretty little thing that they can go and walk through, and isn't it nice that we have our own farmer's market? But it doesn't work for the farmer if they don't buy their groceries there. And so it's kind of like a political statement or a commitment. Whatever money you have in your life that you are directing, and they say that everyone handles a fortune during the course of their lifetime. whatever money that you are redirecting and making your purchases with, these are kind of political decisions. And when you choose to buy from a farmer, you are enabling that farmer to go on and respend that money and have a multiplier effect in the rural economy. And when you choose to buy from the large surface store, you're making a difference. Political decision, and that's your right to do it. But I love it when we come across these conscious consumers who are very consciously and deliberately shopping at the farmer's market. And that's all in addition to the fact that, I mean, I think that at the farmer's market is where they're going to get a much, much higher quality of food, and where they can really find out how it was produced and produced right.
And Adam, you know, as a chef who's you know, you're cooking around here, you're doing a pop-up here on the weekends at Saratoga Apple. You want to talk about farms you buy from, or your philosophy?
Sure. Yeah, our philosophy is to, like I said before, to make the local food the easy choice for people. And I found in my professional work, as well as, you know, everything else, is if you make something if you make the right way, the easy way for people to do something, that's the way they're going to do it. And to me, the right way to eat food is to eat it local and to support your local people, your local farmers. And Nate was just expounding on with the allowing the farmer to reinvest that local money and keeping kind of the really a nice flow and balance to makes me feel great about, you know, my community when people are kind of, you see the same people time and time again, like Nate said, where the people say, see you next week. And we get that down here at the Orchard. We do a pop-up restaurant every weekend down here in conjunction with their tasting room, the cider tasting room. And it really brings a lot of like local and discerning people in here. And you see a lot of the same people every single week, time in and time again. And we get to do a different menu each week, which is a lot of fun for the chefs to whatever we're growing. You know, at the time, we have our own farm just up the road, about a mile away from here. And whatever we're picking that week is what we're going to do. If we want to do, you know, fried squash blossom pizza for 1 week, we can do that. And then, you know, a little bit later in the season, and just really expose our customers to what's in season, what's local, what's fresh. People often ask me, what's your favorite kind of food to cook? You're a chef, you know. And I say, you know, whatever's fresh. And, you know, if it's like the freshest seafood I can get my hands on, or if it's, you know, that squash that we just picked out of the field, you know, 20 minutes ago. And
You know, talking about, you know, farm to table, I remember back in 2005 or six in New York City, everyone wanted to buy from the green markets, and so many chefs were talking about using local ingredients. But I'm seeing a big change in New York City where, you know, it's like the LA influence menu. It's avocado toast on everyone's menu. Where are avocados from? And a lot of the younger people are interested in, you know, types of cuisine or single item dishes like dumplings. But I don't really hear people talking as much about farm to table in the city as they used to. But one of the great things up here, I've heard you guys talking about this. Who wants to talk about that? Farm to table, is it still relevant? You know, it's a big question. Farm co-ops, I mean, we can talk about a couple more things we'll break down. Go, Jared.
Real briefly, we did a feasibility study to see how we could better serve Washington County. And one of our consultants on our tour said, it sounds like to better serve your farmers, you just need to create more eaters. So, back to policy, maybe if policymakers, folks, were keeping that in the front of their brain versus how do I serve this farmer? How do I fix a problem? It's potentially how do I stimulate my economy? How do I enhance their product in a way that it, you know, get the consumers out there interested in it?
Dawn.
I just want to say something going back to before, and I think, you know, the government plays a hand in some choices, but a lot of things come down to personal individual choices, and Nate was talking about it, where you choose to get your food from. And I think it all goes back to community, and I can't emphasize it enough. You gotta, buying local, you'll never regret it. You never will. It tastes better, it's better for you, you're supporting local businesses, and you know, you're strengthening your community. And I don't know if everybody realizes that at the end of the day, and that's just something that feels good. It's not something that you can really regulate. It's a personal choice, but I think it's something that can't be underemphasized. And I think people are growing more in tune to that, but can't hurt to spread the word as much as possible.
Great. We kind of extended this show. We're going to edit it down, but we've covered a lot of, I think we've talked ourselves out. Anything anybody else wants to say? We've had some great ciders from Saratoga Apple Hard Cider and some beer from Argyle Brewing. Anyone wants to say anything else? Eric?
I'll piggyback off of what Adam was saying about the collaboration, the pop-up dinners that 9 Miles East Farm and Saratoga Apple do at Saratoga Apple. We do, for any of you listeners that are interested, we do that every Friday and Saturday night. Check that out on social media, 9 Miles East Farm, Facebook and Instagram, and Saratoga Apple and Saratoga Apple Hard Cider social media. We update the menu every week.
And in response to your comment about regulation, I guess to clarify what I was saying about enhancing eaters' experiences, I'm not saying regulate anything. Deregulate is fine with me. But like the farm brewer license, what it did was, it wasn't, let's just enable small people to brew. It said, let's enable small people to brew so that they buy ingredients from New York State farmers, so that the consumers who are drinking that alcohol, because it's a great gateway to local products, know that it came from New York State farms, and it enhances our, you know, right on this label, pride of New York brand. Those types of things. Think creatively, but keep that in the front of your mind, that how is this going to help the eaters? Because there are way more eaters than there are farmers.
Great. Let's just everyone go around again. Just say your name and your affiliation.
Yes. Nate Darrow, Saratoga Apple, Schuylerville, New York.
Adam Bigelow with 9 Miles East Farm in Schuylerville.
Don Boyajian. I'm a congressional candidate in the 21st Congressional District in New York.
Matt Stewart, one of the owners of Argyle Brewing Company, Greenwich and Cambridge, New York.
Ashley Bridge, also one of the farm owners of Fortunate U Farm.
Eric Darrow, Saratoga Apple, Schuylerville, New York.
Jared Woodcock, Agriculture Coordinator for SUNY Adirondack.
Mike Yezzi, Flying Pigs Farm.
This has been a great show. And Nate, what route are we on right now?
We're on Route 29. Goes from Saratoga Springs to Greenwich and Cambridge, New York.
And this is
as you can hear, it's a very well-trafficked road. We get a high traffic count.
So it's bucolic and pastoral. And Matt, give us the landscape again, looking behind us.
Oh, we get the bonus right here. We're sitting in Saratoga County, looking at more of Saratoga, Washington County, and Equinox Mountain, the highest mountain, ironically enough, in the Taconic Range, but sitting in Vermont.
Well, this is great, man. You guys have the life, and it's been my pleasure coming up here, and we'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.